He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. If you have a question, comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering how do we beat the high cost of long-term care, how does all that Medicaid stuff work, and can we get help if mom or dad is still at home, if my spouse is still at home, is help available, or do we have to go to the nursing home? That's a good question. Well, give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843, and we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. Of course, if you're also wondering about real estate or business law, give us a shout at 888-463-2843. That's 888-GO-DAVID. And, of course, you can use that number if you'd like to sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. Love to see you at the life plan workshops. We're doing these now. well, you know, we used to say every week the good Lord brings. Well, now we're doing, putting on the life plan workshops twice a week, two times for every week the good Lord brings. And then, of course, don't forget, we've got the Black Friday workshop that's coming up. That's the day after Thanksgiving, in case you're a long-term planner. Life plan, the Black Friday workshop, of course, always a special event for us because that is the only workshop throughout the whole year when we serve pie. That's right, pie on Black Friday. But if you'd like to get in earlier than that, no problem. We've added on a few more workshops to sort of make it easier for you. If you get the shopping plans for Black Friday. Of course, you know, if you're planning on shopping on Black Friday, it's not a bad way to, you know, kick back just a little bit. You know, one of the things, I always have to remember this. Don't forget that you can always email me, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. That's david@davidcarrierlaw.com. Or drop me an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. And if you do go to the website, we actually, you know, you don't want to share your email address or something like that. If you just want to make a comment, what have you, you can do that through the website. How's that for high tech? Pretty good. Anyway, I don't know if I've shared with you in the past that I work with other attorneys. I actually coach other attorneys who do this sort of work, who do the elder law and the estate planning and whatnot, and not in this state, in different states. And one of them said something last week that really, you know, I don't want to say caused me to despair, but it did sort of set me back a little bit. And what he said was, it's only money. It's only money. You know, we do this kind of planning, and the comment came out, it's only money. And it really made me, here's the thing. What is money? You know, let's get back to first principles. What is money? And sometimes people say, well, it's a medium of exchange. Well, yeah, okay. It's what they give you for working, right? True enough. But what I say is money is really two things. Money is choices. See, if you have money, then you get to make choices. And in my world, the reason we do all of this stuff is to make sure that you have choices, because the way the world works, okay, if you need the long-term care, if your spouse needs the long-term care, you don't get choices. You get what's left over. You get what, you know, here's what's left. Money is choices. If you have the money, you get, it's not only money, okay? It's the difference between sharing a room with three other people and a private room. It's the difference between getting the care that you need, that your loved one needs, and not. That's what money is in this context. You know, it's only money, and that's one side of it, okay? And that's one of the reasons why we're so passionate, really, about making sure that that you hold on to your money. Because if you don't hold on to it, what's left? And think about, see, and this is the other thing. If you think about the way that you live your life, you know, think about the way, the things that you've done and all the rest of it, why is that a bad thing, that your choices should continue to count throughout your lifetime? Well, we do have a caller on the line. Good morning. Welcome to the David Carrier Show. Oh, we're jumping the gun on the caller. Sorry. Okay, Roy. Oop. I can. We're almost there. See now, if it was anybody else, we'd be teasing you, but we're not, because we actually do have a caller on the line and ready to go. Okay. Good morning, Roy. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
More than welcome. How can I help?
Well, my question was concerning myths that I may have heard over the years about the state opening safe deposit boxes at the time of death. I just wondered if you could clear that up since you have experience.
Well, if you why don't you tell me what the myth is, and then I'll tell you what the reality is.
Well,
how about that?
Just simply that you have to be very careful about what you put in them, because the state will come in at time of death, I guess in every case, and open it up, and they look at what's there, and so on.
Well, number one, I think you do have to be careful about what you put in the safe deposit box. I would agree 100% on that. But the way that works is if a decedent's name is on the box. You know, see, what we generally will do is we'll generally put the box in the trust, and then the trustee has access to it. But if a decedent's name is the owner of the box, then we have to go to the probate court and get an order to inventory the contents of the box. Nobody gets to take anything out. It's not the state of Michigan that does it. It's not the state that does it. But the heirs have to get an order from the probate court to open and inventory the box. You don't get to take anything out of it. But you have to be there in the presence of an officer and just kind of go through it and say, okay, was there a will in there? Were there other testamentary documents in there to indicate who's supposed to get the stuff? But if you don't want you don't want strangers seeing what's in your safe deposit box, either put it in your trust so that your trustee will always have that confidentiality, or that's how you do it, right? Yeah, because otherwise...
That's a big help.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
You betcha. Yeah. The state doesn't really care what's in your safe deposit box, and it's not the state that comes in. It's the it's your survivors. You know, they can come in and say, "Hey, Mom always told us she had a will." In fact, that's one of the emails we'll get to in a little bit about people who tell you that they have wills and they don't. But your mom always said she had a will and we can't find it anywhere in the house, so we got to open the safe deposit box and get the order from the court. But that's just to inventory the box to find out if Mom has any money in there, right? To find out if they're embarrassing things, don't just leave them lying around there, or as they say, put it into the hands of someone that you can trust. When we get back, I want to talk a little bit more about money, because, you know, on the one hand, money is choices. If you do have money, you do get to make choices, which is what this elder law stuff is all about, to make sure that your choices last as long as you do. But it's a little bit more than that. And I just, every once in a while, I get somebody who says, it's only money. And it's like, well, when we get back, we'll go into that a little bit more. Why is it not only money? It's I believe it's a lot more than that. I believe it's not only into the future, you know, which is the choices part of it. Yeah, you know, why do we hang on to the money? Why do we do the asset protection part of it? Why do we do the elder law part of it? Why do we make sure that your money lasts as long as you do? It's important, and it's not just a practical thing. It's also, I believe, this will make everybody turn off the radio. It's a philosophical thing as well. It really is. Well, we'll cover that when we get back. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. Just kind of going over the basics again, just for the, I heard somewhere that, we're at midterm exams are happening now at the school. So, if you missed the, if you're just joining the class late, well, here's the way that wills and trusts work. The fact of the matter is that most people go through life owning everything in their own name. If they become disabled, if they die, well, then it's up to the court to figure out where that stuff is going to go. That's, the way it is. Now, the question is, what do we do? What is a will? What is a trust? How do these things work? The answer is a will is simply instructions to the probate court. When you slip and fall, your stuff goes flying. The probate court's the janitor that cleans up the mess. That's what they do. A trust avoids probate because the assets in the trust don't go flying. You're in the supermarket and you slip and fall. Whoops. Well, you still slipped and fell. Sorry about that. But at least your stuff is all intact, is all in one place. That's how trusts work. Now, the fact of the matter is that 90%, I believe 90% of trust planning actually fails. 90% of it fails. That's what I say. It's probably more than that, actually. And it fails not necessarily because of the way the trust has been set up, although comments on that, that's usually done. But because people... you get this super-duper shiny shopping cart, right? Wonderful, I got a shopping cart now. But they insist on carrying the stuff around in their own name. This is what we call funding the trust. 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. That's the number to call right now if you've got a trust and you're wondering, jeepers, do I have all my stuff in the shopping cart? There's some easy ways to find out. And as I say, most of these fail. Most of the trusts that are done fail because people don't actually get the stuff into the trusts. Now, why don't they? Well, I'll get into that in just a minute. Before the break, I was saying, I don't understand why anyone would rely on a will. Remember, a will is simply instructions to probate court. That's what it is. All right? That's what a will is. So if you think, I don't have to worry about probate. I've got a will. Well, that's okay. It's wrong. Think it if you want to. But you are not going to avoid probate if you have a will. In fact, the only way for your will to work is by going through probate. Now, I've seen some places, I've heard some people say, don't worry about putting your stuff in the trust. The will is going to pick that up and put it into your trust. There's a guy on the radio says that. The will is just going to pick it up and put it in the trust. I'm like, well, okay, why don't you say probate instead? Well, because people don't want to go through probate for good reason. All right? No, it's going to be picked up and put into the trust. It's like, come on, will you please? We're talking about probate. Now, why should we avoid probate? And the answer is, if your stuff goes through probate... If you go through probate, that's where estate recovery happens. And it's different in different states. But in every state, right, even the lien states, even the states where they slap a lien, a Medicaid mortgage on your house and everything else, if you go through probate and you received or your loved one received help with long-term care, okay, now they're coming after the stuff. The state's coming after. It's just kind of simple as that. In some states, like Michigan, like Pennsylvania, that's where it happens. That's where estate recovery happens. And they don't bother with the lien. At least they haven't yet. I mean, you don't have to look too far down the road to think that Medicaid mortgages are in our future. In Michigan, for example, they've been every session of the legislature for the last 10, 12 years, probably longer than that. They've tried to get through a Medicaid lien law, a Medicaid mortgage law. They've tried. They came very, very close. I'll be honest with you. I thought they were going to do it last session of the legislature. I was very, despairing is the word, but I mean, I really thought we would have we'd have a Medicaid mortgage law in Michigan. Say that three times fast. Here right now because they had worked up the bill and everything else. They didn't do it. They didn't do it. Okay, we dodged the bullet. Still, if your assets go through probate, now they're subject to estate recovery, meaning they're going to come after them. All right? So if you received help with the long-term care, and you know what? If you're in a skilled nursing facility, you did. You know, it's almost one-to-one. Not everybody, but close. Close. And so how can you think, well, oh, what the heck, no big deal. We'll go through the probate. It's not a big deal. I'm not worried about anything. I love the courts, and I really enjoy that, you know, that process. Okay. You know, that's a choice to make, but understand that that is the way that you wind up losing everything if there's an estate recovery claim, potentially losing everything if there's a estate recovery claim. So that's the reason we don't ever on purpose go to probate. With one exception, there isn't a wouldn't be a rule unless we had an exception, right? Well, there is an exception, and we cover that in the life plan workshop, because frankly, it takes about half an hour to go through, and you can't even believe the way the thing works that requires us to go through probate. But there is one situation where we will go through probate on purpose, and as I say, if we don't put it up on the board, you just wouldn't believe. How this works. Does that mean I'm incapable of explaining it on the radio? Yes, it does. I can't explain it without pictures. Sometimes I can't even believe it myself. But if you want to come to a life plan workshop and find out what is the one time when we will intentionally put our head in the lion's mouth, what is the one time when we will charge into the Red Sea? What is that time? Well, give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And sign up for a free life plan workshop, and you find out what is that one time when we'll go to probate on purpose, intentionally. And if you'd like to sign up, oh, we've got the Black Friday workshops coming up. We're not sold out of the Black Friday workshops yet. What's special about the Black Friday workshops? Well, Black Friday, of course, is that super special shopping day after Thanksgiving. It's the day after Thanksgiving. And we'd love to see you at the... Now, what is special about the Black Friday workshop? What is special about the Black Friday workshop? Well, I'll tell you. One word. Pie. That's right. The Black Friday workshop is the one workshop throughout the whole year when, in addition to coffee and cookies, we don't stint on the cookies. That's still available. But we also serve pie. That's right. So sign up for a free life plan workshop Black Friday, if you like pie, and we'll see you there. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Hello, and welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. If you have a question, a comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering, what is that Medicaid stuff all about? And I thought that was for poor people only. What's that got to do with me? Well, give us a shout, why don't you? 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And we will get your question on the air. You know, you can also email me, David at davidcarrierlaw.com. That's David at davidcarrierlaw.com, or just get on over to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. You'll see a list of the upcoming life plan workshops. We do these life plan workshops every single week, sometimes twice a week, just so you don't have to wait really, you know, it's not like Christmas. It's not like the circus coming to town, these life plan workshops. You know, the life plan workshops are a way for you, for your family, to get started in the process. And it's not, see, here's the thing with the workshops. We do them every week. Why? Because every week things happen. Every week there are families, and maybe this is you. You know, you've been listening to the show for a while, and it's like, yeah. I was going to say very interesting. Well, maybe it's very interesting. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. But anyway, you've been listening to the show for a while, and it's like, yeah, too bad for those other people who have those problems. And then something happens in your family. So the situation changes somehow. And your family say, jeepers, now I guess I should get over there. Maybe this would be something good for our family to kind of look into. Maybe this is, my situation has changed. That's typically what sparks people to come to the Life Plan workshops. And here's the thing. If it were just, if it were a matter, if we only did these workshops like once in a while or every now and then, or, hey, it's a full moon, better do a workshop. If it were like that, then when your family needed it, we wouldn't be there. So that's why we do them every week, because every week things happen. Every week people's situation changes. Every week new people say, hey, I better get on over, better. Maybe we ought to start paying attention to we ought to start paying some attention to this stuff. And, you know, and usually that's what it is. Usually it's something has happened in the family, or a health issue or something like, you know, or, and I love these, something happened to somebody else. That happens quite often. The people at the workshop, they haven't faced the situation, but friends have, or they heard about it at church, or, you know, someone they were talking to was, you know, gives them the word. And that's what, that's sort of what, you know, that's the tipping point. You know, that's where they, that's where finally it's like, yeah, maybe we ought to look into that stuff and come to work. That's why we do them every single week, okay? You know, whenever you get home, you flip the lights on, you expect the light to go on, right? And, well, whenever you need the light to go on when it comes to this, wow, that's a good analogy. I just thought of that. Anyway, whenever you need the light to go on when it comes to estate planning and elder law, well, I don't know how I could make it easier. I mean, we give you the 800 number, right? 888-GO-DAVID. That's easy. Go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. That's easy. Or drop me an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. If I could make it easier, I would. So if you have an idea how I could make it easier, well, just give me a shout and we'll do that for you. We spent the first part of the show just sort of reviewing the basics. What's a will? What's a trust? What's probate court out there for? I'm not going to go into that again. Well, until I feel like I have to. And if you want to see what that's all about, just get the, you know, you can download the podcast or something like this. Let's do some of these weird. We got some kind of funny emails here. My brother has died. My brother's died. Can he be cremated if only one of four siblings give permission? So, he has left many bills and taxes on his house. The siblings are concerned about having to pay his debts. This may include a lawsuit on work done on his home. This obviously brings up a few issues, right? I mean, the first one is, and let's get rid of the easiest one first, and the one that probably is really causing the most anxiety for the siblings, is you're not obligated in any way, shape, or form for your brother's debts. Okay, so the fact that your brother had work done, the fact that he owes money to a bunch of people and taxes and all the rest of this stuff, he is not obligated, you are not obligated, I should say, the siblings are not obligated to pay those bills. Simple as that. Done. You're not obligated. Okay, you don't have to worry about it. Now, his stuff has to pay those bills. So if there are liens against the house, if there are taxes on the house, that kind of thing, well, those bills have to be paid out of the house. That's true. Definitely has to be paid from the proceeds of the sale of the house. Let's say it says many bills and taxes on his house and the work done on the house. Let's say the house is worth $100,000 and the sum total of those bills is $50,000. Well, you know, that means there's $50,000 left for the siblings, assuming he's not married and has no kids. I'm guessing that from the email. Are you with me on this? The siblings don't have to pay the bills, but his stuff has to pay the bills. So if you were going to get his stuff, if you were going to get his house, all right, well, before you get anything, we have to take off the amount of money that we're paying for all those bills. Are you with me on that? So it reduces the amount that you would get. Let's say flip it around. Let's say he owes $100,000 and the house is worth $50,000. Walk away. No, don't walk. Run away. Let the creditors sort it out, okay? Because you have no obligation at this point. Now, with regard to the cremation, so that's the first thing. You don't owe your brother's money. Your brother owes money, he owes money. Your brother had stuff, sell the stuff, pay the money. Simple rule, basic rule. And that's the way that goes. Now, how about the cremation thing? Well, In most states, it's the next of kin who get to decide. Now, sometimes some states, Michigan is not included, will allow you to name somebody to make that decision. But here, it's very clear that it is not your will. See, you can name somebody. You can name somebody. Say, I want my girlfriend to be the one to determine whether I'm cremated, buried, or what have you. That has no effect. Okay, it's your next of kin who get to decide that issue. And if they want to, you know, cremate you, if they want to bury you, if they want to, well, whatever it is, it's the next of kin who get to decide how that goes. All right, not the person that you name in a will or a trust or whatever else. Now, what if there is nobody steps up? Well, then we look at the will, but not that does not control. You do not control what happens to you after you die. That would be your brothers and sisters, your siblings, you know, siblings, brothers and sisters. Now, what they have to be careful about is when they sign off on that, you know, what if they go to the funeral home and say, yeah, let's cremate them? You have to make sure that you're not obligating yourself. And I think this is the concern. You have to make sure you're not obligating yourself to pay for that. I think that's the big concern here. You know, can he be cremated if only one of four siblings give permission? Well, so long as the other ones decline, they can all say, no, we're not going to. Or if you don't really care, or if you say, yeah, fine, cremate him. Well, you sign off. Just make sure that you're not obligating yourself to pay for that. This one's a very easy one, and before we can hit this one before the break. My uncle left me money in a living trust overseen by an attorney and fiduciary, meaning a trustee. How long does it take to collect what was left? Property is also included, but I don't know how that will be settled. Will the property be sold first? Well, I want to answer the one question. How long does it take to collect what was left? The answer is a really long time. And remember, however long it takes, who cares how long it takes? It's going to be a lot longer than you wish it was. Okay, so it's going to take forever. Just live with it. Will the property be sold first? Well, if you are the only person, the only beneficiary of the trust, and you contact those people and you say, hey, I don't want you to sell the trust. I want you to distribute it to me in kind, right? Just give me the house or whatever it is. They can do that, provided that, let's go back to our last one. You know, we've got all these bills. Well, look, if you've got all these bills, then they're going to have to sell the property, pay the bills. You get the leftovers. That means you don't get the house unless you want to step up and pay the bills. Are you with me on that? So, you know, these things always take much longer than you think. It's not an ATM. But at the end of the day, I guess it's usually worth it. You've been listening, like this show. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. And this is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. Judy, if you want to call back, we'll get you right back on the line. That would be no problem. Just handling a few of these sort of basic, probate type questions. My sister is handling my mother's finances and care, but will not supply me with any documents or information. I would like a neutral party involved, but have only two chickens and a bag of magic beans. Not sure what that means other than doesn't have the money to pay for going to court. But here's the thing, and this is one of those questions that comes up time and again where people are concerned that they don't get the information. You know, mom and dad, they're going through this or that, and, you know, they won't tell us what's going on. But I'll tell you what's going on right now. Ken from Wyoming just called. Ken, how can we help?
Yeah, can a judge revoke your medical marijuana card as a condition of your bond? And if so, how can he do that if you're using it for a medical reason? Can he dictate your health care from the bench?
Sure. Sure, they do it all the time. I mean, and usually it goes the other way. Usually they require people to stay on, you know, antipsychotic drugs and things like that. You know, that's usually how, you know, if you're going to be out in the community and what have you, then you have to stay on the, on the medicine, of course. And usually, I think it's probably unusual that they would use their discretion to say, well, you can't take a medicine that you're supposed to be taking. Now, of course, the problem you get with the medical marijuana is that it's still against the federal law. I mean, there's a law where you can get arrested and put in federal in the federal pen. It doesn't matter what Michigan says. I mean, a judge is going to have pretty wide discretion as far as that goes. You know, they get to if your choice is, hey, do I stay in the Hooskow or out in the community? Well, that's what bond is, right? What was the arrest for?
Misdemeanor assault charge.
Reefer madness, baby. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's what the judges. I don't know.
It didn't make any sense. And when you're using it for a medical reason to treat pain, and the judge just can willy nilly say, nope, you're not doing that anymore. It's like, so if I had a prescription for Vicodin, can you take that? What about my blood pressure medication? You want to,
Yeah, yeah.
Go through my whole medical file a minute and, thumb through it and see what I can and cannot take. I just don't understand how that makes any sense.
Well, the thing is, when the court is has got somebody who's, in front of them, and it's like, well, do we keep them in jail or do we, let them, allow them to post bond, they could put a tether on you. They have very, very wide. Sometimes they make people wear sandwich signs saying, I'm a whatever the heck it is. Or they put all kinds of restrictions and, you can't make me wear a sandwich board and walk around saying I'm a sex offender. Well, yeah, I can, Or you can't tell me I can't go to the movies. Yeah, I can. That's the deal. Now you can always challenge a court's ruling for abuse of discretion, and were these reasonable and all the rest, and have it your attorney can have it have it reviewed, and have a bond hearing, kick it up a notch. But I'd be very slow to say that a judge could not, as a condition of bond, say that thou shalt not do A, B, or C.
Right.
You got these guys, thinking about it. I'm just, the examples multiply. You can be out on bond, but you got to go to AAA, or AA, excuse me.
Right.
You have to go get a triptych. No. You have to go to the meetings, and you have to check in, and you have to do all these things. Yeah, they put all kinds of stuff like that.
And I understand that, you can't use alcohol because it's a condition of the bond. I can understand that. You can't, even though it's legal for you to own a firearm, you can't use, you can't have firearms while you're on bond.
Yeah, and there's even a constitutional right for that one.
Right. It's just when a judge turns into your doctor is where I have the problem.
Yeah.
I can understand, you're not using alcohol for medicinal purposes. You're not using your firearm to get rid of your pain. You're not, It's when they all of a sudden become your doctor instead of the judge, or, their juridical authority now moves into your doctor-patient relationship, I guess, is where I'm having the problem.
Yeah. I'm sort of with you on that. It's just that it goes the other way. They can require you to be on certain things.
Right.
And, if they get control of your body, I guess they could control your body. I mean, fundamentally.
Well, I guess it is what it is. I just was wondering if you had some precedent or something you've seen before that I haven't. I was just curious and thought I'd ask the question.
And it's an excellent question, Ken.
All right. Thank you very much.
Charge on, brother. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. See, is there anything we don't deal with? Is there anything? And that's information, isn't it? And the two questions we've got right here are sort of the similar one. Number one, sister handling mother's finances care will not supply me with any documents or information, right? Second one, if a personal representative sells an asset without the consent of a beneficiary, would they not be deprived of due process? PR selling income real estate that's been in our family for five generations. I'm just trying to find a way to stop it. Well, both of these get to the role of the beneficiary versus the fiduciary. A fiduciary is the trustee, is the personal representative, the executor, the agent, the administrator. There's all kinds of words, from patient advocate. Okay, all kinds of words for these roles. okay? But generally, it's where somebody's in charge of somebody else or somebody else's stuff. And does the beneficiary have a right to know that? And usually, the beneficiary has no right to know that. In fact, it'd be a violation of the trustee's responsibility, like in the sister's handling mom's finances. Hey, your sister owes your mom a duty of confidentiality. She's not supposed to tell you. She's not supposed to tell. Now, if mom says it's okay, well, it's okay. But sister, you know, on her own, maybe it'll make things easier in the family. She has to resist the urge to just make things easier in the family because that would be a violation of mom's confidentiality. Her duty is to mom, not to you. And same way with the personal representative selling stuff. Listen, the personal representative is there to sell stuff, is to get the estate moving along. It's not a committee. You know what a camel is, right? A camel is a horse designed by a committee. That's why we have one personal representative. All right? You're listening to the David Carrier. That's why you have one host. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to a life plan workshop. These are the ones we do every single week, the good Lord brings, and twice on holidays. Black Friday, of course, means pie. You know why? Why does it mean pie? Why do we do pie? Because they're cheap, that's why. After Thanksgiving, there's lots of pie hanging around. We got to do something with it. I'm serious. That's why we started doing the pie. Because everybody brought a pie for Thanksgiving. We had all this extra pie hanging around the house. So what are we going to do with all this pie? I know. The workshop. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.